The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
This week on the Retirement and IRA Show, we're going to talk some tax issues or tax and talk issues, one or the other.
It will be taxing
right up front here. We've actually got kind of a mixed bag of tax elements. We just finished tax season, if you will, April 15th. This show is going to play live for the first time on April 29th of 2017. So we thought it was timely to talk about some tax issues, clear up some tax items, do a little tax quiz that apparently most people in the United States didn't do well on, or at least those who took the quiz. Also talk about maybe some strategies for considering how you might make your 2017 tax life better than your 2016 tax life. And when better to discuss this than when 2016 taxes are fresh in your mind? Even some of you who filed an extension may not be done talking about and thinking about 2016 tax issues. So welcome to the show today. We'll try to tie in a lot of these tax questions to retirement planning, and we'll even chat about some tax issues involving IRAs, I believe. My name is Chris Stein. I'm a certified financial planner. I'm here actually with Justin Fundolinski, our resident tax
guy.
Dude.
Yeah. Filling in for Jim today.
You are filling in for Jim. He's not really on vacation. He's at a conference learning stuff. He's at the Retirement Income Symposium or something like that. It's about specifically retirement income strategies in Chicago right now. So by the time this plays, he'll be home. So if you're listening to this thinking you can go and burglarize his home, when you're listening to this... he'll be there, and he is armed most of the time.
Generally, yeah.
But he is out of town as we're recording this, because we're recording this on the Tuesday prior. I don't even know the day. The 25th today. I should know that.
And I imagine he'll be coming back with lots of income tips.
Yeah, because...
I would hope if he's spending 2 days
All the big
there.
Names, Mary Beth Franklin, who those of you who read a lot on Social Security and retirement planning... I'm sure you recognize her name.
Michael Kitskis, I believe, is there.
Yep, he's going to be there. Natalie Choate is going to be there.
That'll be a good one. Yeah.
She always comes up with a few really mind-bending nuggets about some strategies or pitfalls to watch out for. So we'll have lots of good stuff to talk about when Jim gets back. And actually, the office has been kind of vacant because you were gone as well, Justin. Where did you end up going?
I took my wife to New York City.
The big city?
The big city.
Oh, so when I heard you were going to New York, I thought you were going home.
No. Oh. Went to the city.
Wow.
I had a good friend from way back in high school that eloped in Las Vegas and threw a party back home where he lives in New York City. So I just went to meet up with some old friends. So it was quite a good time.
It's a long journey from New York to go get married in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It's true. I thought you were going to say it's a long journey to just go to a party in New York.
Well, I understand going to a good friend, you know, showing up for their, what was essentially their reception, you know, a party after their wedding. But for them to, one can elope in the state of New York, I would hope.
I would imagine.
I guess it was more exciting to go to Las Vegas.
They did their wedding or their elopement and honeymoon for the week in Vegas. And they did like the classic, just go do a crazy elopement at a small.
Oh, they just showed up? Nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did they go through the drive-thru?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I think if you really wanted to do the whole thing, talk about us being able to tell stories. We got married in our car at the drive-thru.
Right. Right. It's pretty good.
So how was New York?
It was really good. It was good. I got to leave my children at home.
And they were all...
I didn't see them for nearly 4 days.
They were alive and well when you returned?
They were. I left my mother there, so pretty good. I don't think she was alive and well by the time I returned, but she said she enjoyed it. But we got to walk around the city. My wife and I are both avid hikers, so being in a big city was...
I don't think they call it hiking when you're in the city.
Though. Yeah, I know. But we put on probably more miles than anyone. We just kind of took a train down to, what is it, Battery Park, so she could look at Statue of Liberty, because she had never seen it before, and we just walked from there for the entire day. I think we had some 40,000 steps on our little pedometers.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. So it was good. Got to see Soho and lots of things. Oh, you know what I got to see? I got to see Fearless Girl, this statue in front of the Raging Bull.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot about it. Do you know about that?
Yeah, were there a lot of people there when you...
Oh, my God.
I've heard there was
people
taking pictures.
Oh, I mean, I had to force myself into a very tight crowd to get a picture.
Really?
Yeah. It was...
Still?
Yeah. And it's
been
up
for a while.
It's in the middle of a street, too, you know, yeah. So, but I did get a picture with her. And, you know, I thought, oh, this is a really good thing. It's all about a girl standing up to the Raging Bull, gender equality, things like that, you know, things that I support. Turns out that it's a big advertisement. An advertisement. Can you believe that?
Not completely shocking. But and the guy that put the bull there is actually kind of upset because it's changing the context of his art there.
Yeah.
Where it was his... His idea is supposed to represent the resilience and stick-to-itiveness of the American people and the strength of the bull. It wasn't really a raging bull, right? As you called it, that's not really what he intended it to be. But now there's this little girl there, and because she looks so small and not. Not weak, certainly. That's the wrong word.
Fearless.
Because she's being defiant. But it makes the bull look way more aggressive and angry than what it was meant to be.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, a bull inherently is kind of a little big and boisterous, but it wasn't... The whole intent of the bull isn't to show he was, like, destroying the street or something. It was just a powerful symbol. So the artist for the bull is actually up in arms and wants the whole thing moved.
I almost have to agree with it now that I've learned that it's an advertisement installation rather than an artistic installation.
Yeah,
you know?
I think they wanted to make people think it was an artistic comment, so they have this nice kind of backstory about gender equality in business and that sort of thing. So, but I think if they were going to do that more effectively, they would have removed their name and their attachment to it completely.
Right.
They would have funded some nonprofit that would put some artwork there, as opposed to we're a commercial enterprise that has a tie to Wall Street,
right?
Because they're an investment firm of sorts.
Yes, they are.
And once I learned more of that story, it kind of... The shine came off a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
I kind of liked it at first, but I can totally understand, and I forget his name off the top of my head, the artist that did the bull, I totally understand his, because they could have put the girl anywhere. They chose to put it right there with the bull. So it's almost like you had art, and now some other artist came and painted some more stuff on your artwork. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's close enough. It's not like it's down the street.
It is definitely changing
it's
the
right
context.
There.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But it also turns out, I was reading about the artist who put the original bull in. Mm-hmm. I think he was a bit of a guerrilla artist. You know, he apparently had the sculpture, and in a downturn in the market, I think sometime in the mid-80s, he installed it in the dark of night in front of Wall Street. I think in front of the exchange. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was exactly what you said to, oh, well, we're down, but we're strong, so we can come back.
Right.
So, interesting story.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got to see it. I haven't seen it in person, obviously. I haven't been out there, but yeah. There's been a lot of coverage.
Oh, it's wild.
While you were gone.
It's wild. Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think they're going to end up moving it eventually, but probably not until the social excitement goes down, because it's being very effective in getting the name out. And
I think it was supposed to be removed by the end of February originally, and because it's
so popular.
Massive crowds around it. I mean, there was more crowds around it than I felt there were crowds at the Statue of Liberty.
Well, she's been there for a long time, right?
She's not seen her before.
Yeah, she's been there.
Meaningless at this point, right?
So what, the more important question is, what's the best food you had there?
Oh boy! You know, actually, I'm a pretty big seafood fan. I don't get any of that out here.
Yeah.
So while I was in New York, I didn't have much. But I also went to see someone I grew up with and spent a lot of time with. It was my cousin. We were just a couple months apart. He lives up in Connecticut, so we took the North Line up to see him, and I ate a lot of clams and oysters and shrimp, and it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I disgusted my wife because she's a vegetarian, so eating raw clams and oysters is not.
Well, you didn't tell her how kind it was to them that you're not burning them with fire before you eat them.
Yeah, I just dip them in horseradish beforehand or vinegar. Well,
that's like numbing it. That's like numbing them up.
No. So it was good.
So
it was,
she doesn't eat seafood either.
No,
vegetarian.
Not at all.
No living animals.
No,
just
and it's
living plants.
Yeah, living plants, and maybe not even living plants. You know,
while they're alive, but they were once living.
Yeah,
as most plants.
A lot of starches too. She's really into the starches.
Really?
Yeah.
Like she likes potatoes and stuff.
Rice. Not so much pasta though. It's really weird.
So bread. What about bread?
Oh yeah.
Oh, so it's not the wheat that's the problem.
No.
She just looks at it in the form of bread rather than pasta.
Yes. She loves her
Well, there's
bread.
Some good pasta out there, too. Did you get her some good pasta in New York?
No, we didn't. We got some bagels, which, I mean, out here,
isn't
I don't
it
know.
Amazing how different the bagels
oh,
are?
Oh, my. You know,
it's weird. It's kind of like the barbecue in Texas.
Yes.
You can have the recipe, the same meat. You could bring it up here. You cook it here, and it's not the same.
Right.
There's something. Elevation,
maybe?
I don't know what it is. You wouldn't think that elevation would harm barbecue that much. Yeah. I can understand baking because the chemical process is altered, but I don't know. I'm really disappointed. There's no good barbecue that I have found in Colorado. I can eat it, right? I found some that I can eat, but it's not the, oh, my gosh, this is so great kind of stuff you get when you go somewhere that really knows how to do it. And the bagels are the same.
Yeah. It's like chicken wings in Buffalo.
Yeah, or the baked goods from, like, the Wisconsin and in that area. You can't replicate that here.
Mm-mm.
It just, I have never seen anybody who, some rocket scientist needs to leave the rocket science field and figure out how to transform all of those wonderful foods and bring them to Colorado.
Right.
So, anyway. What was I going to say? Oh, tax issues.
Ooh.
Where do you want to start?
Oh, maybe a little warm up for everyone. I think the quiz might be good. You know, we can read the questions. We can, read the A, B, C, D or E answers.
Oh, it was multiple choice.
Multiple choice.
Do you know where this quiz was administered?
It was administered on, I think, MarketWatch is where I found it. Jim gave me the questions, and he said, use these, but
didn't do well?
No, they got an F, according to MarketWatch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think most questions were answered around 50 to 60%.
Our listeners are very sophisticated and astute. So I'm sure that you should be keeping score at home.
I agree. Yeah, send us your scores.
By the way, I don't think we have any. Do we have any emails? We don't have any emails. Jim's holding a couple emails. He's still promised that. I'm going to put out the plea anyway, but he's promised me that we do have an email pending in the pile from either Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, or Delaware. Those are the final four states we need to cover on the Eastern Seaboard. As soon as we have questions or contact ideas, even a comment, I'd accept a comment. We didn't have to be a question. Just a shout out. Hey, we're here. Kind of like Horton Hears a Who. We are here. We are here. We are here. Right? Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Delaware. Every other state on the Eastern Seaboard, we've got covered. And actually, we would have every state all the way to what a lot of people refer to as the Midwest. Right? Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, kind of drawing that line down from Michigan. Well, actually, all the way up to Wisconsin. We'd have all that covered to the east, and I'd feel a sense of accomplishment here.
Right.
So for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, we have a map of the United States. I have a star put on every state from which we have received contact, usually a question of some kind for the show. We have well over half of the states covered now, and I've made it my personal goal to fill in the Eastern Seaboard before we start out west. I'm trying to develop the map much in the way the United States
manifest grew. Destination?
Yes. Well, destiny. Not destination. We knew what you meant, though. You're filling in well for Jim.
I did that on purpose.
Because that's exactly what he would have said. So, Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Delaware, we need you. I don't know what state we have, but apparently one of those four has reached out to us. And when Jim's back next week, we'll hopefully find out who that is. But please send us an email. Easiest way is to go to jimhelps.com. That's the short version. You can also go to the retirementandiraShow.com. That's a really long one. But jimhelps.com is the shortest URL. And on there's a contact form, and you can just submit a question to us right on that contact form. And we will generally reach out to you. If it's something we use on the radio immediately, we'll tell you when that's going to air so that you can listen to your answer. If we need more information, we'll reach back to you. We'll keep your identity hidden, anonymous. We'll keep you anonymous. We can use that word since Jim's not here. And or his favorite, anonymity.
Anonymity.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah. That's the bane of his existence. He's, however, practicing, I believe, because he's been. There's the challenge. You've heard of the heard the challenge.
Excited for that.
But that'll show. Be the show when he gets back. But if you submit us a question, we will use it and make sure you tell us where you're from so that we can apply a star. Certainly, if you're from another state, we're not discriminating. We will certainly answer your question. But we'll give priority to Maine, New Hampshire, Delaware, and Rhode Island. So back to the tax question. Let's start with the tax quiz. What's the first quiz question?
First and hopefully the easiest. Hopefully you can get this one.
Are you ready? I haven't seen the list.
Are you ready for this?
I'll try.
Is the money you put in a Roth IRA pre-tax or post-tax? A, pre-tax. B, post-tax. Or C, none of the above. Mind you, only 42%. Got this answer right.
Well, that means a few people just said none of the above, and then it was split because they were guessing on the other two, mm-hmm. probably. So a Roth, as most of our listeners will hopefully know if they've listened for any period of time, you don't deduct your contributions into a Roth IRA, which means you're putting money in after you've paid tax on it. You've paid tax in the year you've earned it, and then the money goes into the Roth and grows tax-free as long as you make a qualified withdrawal at some point in the future, which there's restrictions on age, how long it's been in there, those sorts of things. You can take the money out with the earnings, actually. And this, let me emphasize that, because I've actually seen recently, I kind of monitor forums and blogs and news outlets for retirement topics. And something that comes up more frequently than I would imagine are people that believe that you put money in, and the money that's in the Roth, people realize they've paid tax on it, so they won't pay tax again. But they somehow think that the growth, the earnings, assuming there are some, and that's the goal, but not guaranteed, but assuming there's earnings in there, they think those are taxed. That's not true. If you make what's called a qualified withdrawal, you all the money that's in there, even the growth piece, comes out tax-free, which is one of the things that make these accounts so attractive that as far as taxes are concerned, my favorite kind of tax is tax-free.
Yeah.
Tax deferred,
you
know, eventually you're going to pay the tax. That just means you're putting it off till tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe tomorrow is a better day to pay taxes, so there's some benefit to that. Or maybe it's going to be at a different rate, a better rate than you have today. But tax deferral is not nearly as attractive as tax free.
We love free.
So one of the many reasons that we like Roths. So the money going into a Roth, I'm going to say pre-tax, post-tax?
No, was A was pre-tax.
Okay, so that's not A. It's B.
B.
B would be the answer
post-tax.
For those of you keeping track at home. Contributions to a Roth are post-tax contributions.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it.
Oh, I have a thing. Oh, I don't have a ding. I have a clap, though.
All right.
I'm going to clap for myself.
You ready for the next
one?
Do
I get to ask you any? Or
you may if you want, but...
Okay. Well, we can ask probably one more before the end of the break here.
Oh, right.
Until we get to the break.
Can married couples file taxes separately? A, yes. B, no. Now this one, 90% got the answer right.
That was two choices?
Two choices.
Yes or no?
Yes or no. Can a married couple file taxes separately?
Yes.
That is right. Get your clapping in there.
Okay. Seriously? People failed this quiz?
Well, this one, 90% got the answer right.
Okay.
So, you know, who knows?
Now, most people, when they're married, file jointly. I don't
nine
know
out of ten.
It says that on there? 9 out of 10 file jointly?
No, I think it's probably 90% of the time it's appropriate. There are very... occasional times where it's not appropriate or maybe more beneficial to file separately. For example, the first one that comes to my mind is two very high earners where they've already kind of phased out of all of their credits or deductions that they could get. Yeah. So now they're kind of using the income brackets to their own advantage. The married filing jointly brackets don't work so well. Let's see, what else is there? I've got a list here. I don't know where this one came from. I don't necessarily believe in it, but if you or your spouse owe back taxes or child support, the IRS may come and levy something against you, which they will.
So if you filed separately, you'd get some protection for that?
No. I mean, if you file jointly, you can just file as an injured spouse, and the portion of your taxes that you're supposed to get back, you'll get back. So I don't really think that's a good reason why to do that. Yeah.
So what Justin's talking about there is if the IRS comes after you, if you've mixed on the return, they're going to withhold. A lot of times they'll have reasons to withhold a tax refund that's due to you. Child support. That's one of the cases where something that doesn't technically have anything to do with taxes, they give the IRS the authority to withhold money that would otherwise be paid to you to satisfy those child support. So if it's a second marriage and the one spouse owes some child support,
exactly,
then they're going to keep the whole return. Now, the other, you could file, like you said, as an injured spouse, saying, this isn't my fault. This isn't my deal. That's the other, you know, that's my wife or my husband that has that issue. My part shouldn't be withheld,
right.
And then you could get it back.
So yeah, and they'll give you the proportionate amount that should be yours in that case.
Right.
Another option is maybe you are going through a divorce and you got a shiesty wife or husband that might not be reporting their taxes correctly, and you don't want to get caught up in that. So just to kind of CYA in that
so
case.
So strategic separation, if you will, of your finances.
Yeah.
So that music, you probably remember this, Justin, you've been on the show a couple times now. A handful of times, 5-6 times now.
At least,
maybe.
I'd say at least.
But that music means we're at the end of the first segment. We've got our first break coming up. When we get back from this break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which is the year that Social Security started. On this show, we do talk a fair amount of Social Security, and we're going to get an update later on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, which is the blog post that Jim and I do. But this 1935 song is just one of the top hits from that year. And in our look back to the beginnings of Social Security, we're going to get the musical experience from that year. So we'll be back with you after this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. I will have to say that's one of the songs we've never played on the Retirement and IRA Show. I would have remembered that one. This is from 1935.
That's when you and Jim were growing up and you listened to the song? Is that?
Oh, Jim used to sing this all the time in the office because I didn't recognize it, but he listened to it a lot when he was young.
Oh, okay.
So this was from 1935. Smith Bellow and his orchestra had this popular hit, Roll Along Prairie Moon. And so Smith Bellow began his career in the 1920s as a radio singer, but was able to put his own big band group together by the early 30s. He started a second career in the late 30s as the first singing screen cowboy. The first. He's not the most well-known.
No, that's for sure.
Got Gene Autry and Roy Rogers.
Yeah.
But he performed in many 20th Century Fox Zane Grey serial productions.
Zane Grey.
So you recognize that, right?
No. Kind
of Western novels, characters?
No, this is all before me.
I know it's before you, but you don't ever watch reruns on anything?
I don't even know what cable TV is, okay? I mean,
even growing up? It's not like you lived in the boonies.
No, that's true. That's
Buffalo
true.
Or something.
I didn't. Yeah, no. There was cable TV running into homes, but we grew up on an antenna. We didn't have cable TV.
Here's a fun fact for you. Where was the first? Well, let me verify this with Google. When I was young, this was. Let's see. One quick thing. Where do you think the first cable TV system was installed?
First cable TV system installation.
Yeah, I was lied to.
I'm going to go with Chicago.
No, it was Mahoney City, Pennsylvania.
Oh. How's their cable these days?
1940. Oh. That was a long time ago. Not quite 1935, but yeah, that's crazy. I was told it was somewhere in Wyoming, which was completely false. I'm going to have to take that up. Wait a minute.
There's some contention around this topic?
Mountain, a common carrier that also transmitted television signals, blah, 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 in several Wyoming towns. So Wyoming was early, not 1940. Anyway.
Pennsylvania.
It was Pennsylvania, 1940. Congratulations, Pennsylvania. So, that was the year, by the way, 1935, when that song came out, the first year of Social Security. So when you signed up for Social Security, that's what you're listening to on the radio.
Oh.
Or live, I guess, if you're around where these folks were.
You'd like wind up record players at that point in time, right? I mean, there was electricity back
then,
right?
I guess if you were rich,
right?
And stuff.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Most people had a radio, and they sat around. They'd have a little dinner. They'd turn on the radio. They'd all huddle around the radio and stare at it as if it was a television, but it wasn't. It was a radio.
All right.
But what else are you going to look at? Each other? You've been looking at each other all day.
Right.
This is a break. You can stare at the light on the radio.
You stare at the
pretending you're looking at it as if the person is actually in the singing person is inside the box.
Was multitasking not a thing? Like, I mean, I feel like
not really. That didn't start until about 1973.
That's a verifiable fact right there. Yeah.
We, I can look that up on Wikipedia. Yeah, so listen to the radio. One thing I forgot to ask you in the last segment, though, I know you're shopping for a new home.
We are.
How is that going? Did you find a new... I know you found one, but there were some
the dream
some
home.
Issues.
The dream home.
The dream, but then the dream was crushed.
The dream. Well,
is it on? Is there? Is it simmering?
It's complicated.
Oh,
yeah. So, you know, my wife and I are both very outdoorsy. Mm-hmm. We like to hike and mountain bike and Babbitt mountain biker. Mm-hmm. And my kids, this is what we do with them on the weekends. So, you know, we literally spend hours and hours and hours of the week just driving back and forth from Windsor, Colorado, up into the foothills just so we can have some close by recreation. So,
because you're sick of walking the Platte River Trail or whatever?
The Poudre?
Or the Poudre River Trail.
Yeah. So, we found a great home that we loved. It was minutes from Laurie State Park. All the trails we access anyways. It's just a beautiful area right next to Horsetooth Reservoir, so you could kayak and maybe someday have a boat if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, after some trials and tribulations of going through inspection, it turns out that the floor joists were rotten out pretty bad down in the basement or the crawl space.
And can't just throw some paint on there?
Yeah, no. Big job. And maybe the cause, we're not sure 100% on that yet, but maybe some negative grading issues. It's kind of in the hills, so water runs to the house. So it's a big job to fix. It's not just fixing the joist, which is big in itself. It'd be probably a big regrading job around half of the house. So we'll see what happens. From what I know, I think they've taken the house down off the market at this point in time. I don't see it up there, and my wife has been incommunicado with them. We're supposed to just kind of have some low-key meetings to see what their plans are and if it makes sense for us. So it's not over. It's not over in any way, shape, or form. I mean, we are holding up high hopes, but we just got to kind of play it out.
Interesting.
Yes.
But have you, any luck finding anything else, or you?
No. Well, I've looked.
Kind of just waiting.
I've been running around looking at other places. They are starting to pop up a little more frequently, but
'tis the season.
Yeah, it is the season, but nothing that has tickled my fancy. Yeah.
How about way up in the hills?
Well, it's tough because we both work in Fort Collins. And we also have three little ones, and we want to have access to things for them, like soccer or eventually...
Not just bears and foxes and stuff?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. We want to socialize our children.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Don't want to raise them as mountain people. Cave dwellers.
Yeah. I mean...
Okay. I get
it. It is what it is for them, but...
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah.
Well, if I hear of anything, I'll let you know.
I appreciate it.
So, back to our tax quiz.
Oh, boy. They are very difficult questions so far.
So far, yeah. I think we're two for two.
Two for two.
You can file married separately.
Yes.
A variety of reasons why you might do that. For the vast majority of married folks, though, if you look at the numbers, you're going to be better off filing jointly than you are filing separately.
The only time it starts to get a little weird is when you get really high incomes from both earners. So.
Yeah, or some very unique circumstances. If your tax situation is fairly normal, then married filing joint is almost for sure going to be the way to go.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Most of these tax packages now, the software that you use actually will do a quick comparison for you.
Oh, yeah.
It's superficial because you really need to make some specific adjustments if you're doing it separately.
Yeah.
But it'll give you an idea if maybe you want to think about going down that path.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what's number three?
All right, number three. When can you adjust your withholdings and exemptions on your W-4 with your employer? Now, the W-4 is what you fill out to say this is how much I want withheld out of my paycheck, just so everyone's aware of that.
Yep.
You've all filled one out, but it may have been 20, 30 years ago, so let's go from there. A, any time of the year. B, any time before January 1st of each year, which... kind of sounds like any time of the year to me, any time before January 1st.
Any time of the previous year.
Okay. After you receive your W-2 from the previous year's earnings, is C, and D, by the end of year tax deadline. 67% got this answer right.
Hmm. The answer is, in fact, A.
That's correct.
Anytime you want.
Anytime.
Any old time.
Anytime.
So if your tax situation changes mid-year, maybe you have a baby, right?
That's a great reason.
Or maybe you get divorced.
That's a big one.
Or maybe you get remarried.
Yes.
Or I could list all kinds of things. Any
are
life
unemployed
events.
For part of the year, get
you
a new job.
Get a new job, different level of income.
Yes.
Sell your house and now you rent.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe you had a large deduction for mortgage interest and now you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or really anything that fundamentally changes your tax situation, they allow you to change your withholdings.
Yes.
Or maybe you just want to loan the government money interest-free.
You could do that.
So you can have them withhold a lot.
That's a good conversation right there. Let's get into that. I mean,
really giving the loan of a tax-free?
I think.
Interest-free?
I think, personally, I would rather pay the government a couple hundred dollars and be as close as possible so I actually end up owing, as long as I'm not getting any penalties or anything like that. But my wife, on the other hand, I look at things logically. She has the emotional side, both valid sides of the argument, I've learned.
I'm glad you added that last part there, especially if she's listening.
Yes, they're both
valid.
50-50 on legitimacy there.
Although hers is a little more valid than yours, just so you know.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Because guess what? We're going to refund these days, I'll tell you what. She likes it's like
my wife is exactly the same
built-in
way.
Built-in savings plan.
I try to hit it a little shy.
Yeah.
Because the whole thought of what I'm getting at is when you are owed a refund, you've given too much money in withholding to the government during your working year, and now they're just giving you your own money back. They're giving you money you shouldn't have sent to them back to you with no interest or anything.
Nothing.
So you're just over the year you're giving them extra money. Now, yeah, is it nice to get a couple thousand dollars back? Well, I guess if you want to think of it that way, it is. But they're just giving you your own money back. You may as well have put that money in a box under your bed or something like that. My wife likes that.
Oh, yeah.
She loves to get that refund. I do our taxes. So so we end up with my way, but there's usually some friction.
Yes.
Surrounding
I was
going to
get
this
it this
idea.
Year if we didn't get a refund.
So I congratulate you on altering your method so you get a refund.
I had more withheld, but I still thought, I mean, the year before we owed big mm-hmm. time. So I altered it to try and get it closer to zero. And it turned out to work out in my favor because my wife actually changed jobs, took some time off from for maternity leave. So she was out of work a little bit there mm-hmm. too. So there's less income. But also, we had another child,
mm-hmm.
which helped out.
Ding, 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 ding,
and
ding.
And the other side of it, a very interesting twist here, is she works for UC Health, and mm-hmm. they do not participate in Social Security. But what they do is they take 6.2% of your income, mm-hmm. and they put it into a 403B, I believe.
Okay, yep.
And so we're not getting taxed on that income anymore where we were before. Okay, so all of a sudden there's this chunk of income that we're saving that would go to Social Security beforehand. We were getting taxed on. Now we're not. So it helped out quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you start working at mm-hmm. UC Health, you might be able to reduce your withholdings a little bit.
By the way, when was your child born, your last child?
April
14th. In April?
Yes. Yeah.
Does it matter during the year when your child is born?
Absolutely
for,
not.
For tax purposes?
Nope.
No, as long as the child is breathing outside
yes.
of the mother.
Yes.
Prior to midnight on December 31st, it's treated as if that child was with you all year long for tax purposes.
And it was. There's no question about that.
Correct. Correct. So get this. I had it timed out perfectly on our final child.
Oh.
Of course, these are the discussions one has.
You started thinking about this 10 months in advance.
Yes. So we had due date December 28th.
Uh-huh.
Perfect.
How'd it work out?
Perfect. It was looking perfect until December 20th. The darn doctor obviously didn't understand the tax code because the doctor says, well, looks like she's not quite ready.
Mm-hmm.
She was going to be a scheduled cesarean
mm-hmm.
due to health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So do some weird test, some kind of magic voodoo thing, something that has probably no basis
administered by the IRS.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
And they determined she's not quite ready yet. She needs to cook a little longer. And I said, oh, maybe a couple of days? And they said, no, I'm going to be out of town.
Oh.
Over the New Year's or so. So we should, unless she decides to show up on her own, we should probably just schedule this for January 12th.
He just cost you a couple grand.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I stared at this person. They clearly didn't understand.
Right.
And I felt that it was an awkward time there to discuss the tax ramifications of this decision.
Well,
so I missed it by that much.
They were going on vacation. They didn't want
to. See, I'm not. I think we should have just stuck to the, I don't know.
So you lost on that one.
I did. I thought I nailed it perfectly. No.
You didn't go
missed
seek
it by 12 days.
Other help.
At that time, it was a little late in the process.
All right. Well.
The 12th. You kidding me? Yeah. Wow. Anyway. So if you're.
So then you had to
I would shoot a little earlier. Yeah. Maybe shoot for early December. Because shooting for the end of December, that cut it a little too close, and things apparently went a little awry. So early December, that's the target time.
All right.
Because then you don't have to feed the baby, but you get to deduct the entire baby and get the child tax credit, if you're qualified to receive such a thing, for the entire year, as if they were alive with you in the home the entire year.
Right.
And it's a glorious thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I missed it. So congratulations on receiving another child. Onto your tax situation.
It's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful. In other fashions, like child care, although you get a credit for that, it hurts. Mm-hmm. It hurts bad.
It does hurt.
All right, number four, a 529 plan is A, way to make tax-deductible contributions for college savings, B, a college investment plan that earns tax-free income as it grows, or C, a plan that allows qualified users to defer their tax payments. 42% got the answer right. Do you want me to read those over again?
Yeah, because two of them. Okay, go ahead. Read them one more time.
A way to make tax-deductible contributions for college savings.
Mm-hmm.
B, a college investment plan that earns tax-free income as it grows. And C, a plan that allows qualified users to defer their tax payments.
That would be A again.
To make tax-deductible contributions, I'm going B. It's the earnings are tax-free on it. I don't think you get much of it. You might get a small deduction on your state tax.
It's tax-deductible at the state level if you...
If you do it, if it's administered in the... Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think more so... It's for tax-free
growth.
Tax-free growth, yeah. Let's see. Let's look at the answers.
You didn't look up the answer to these already?
Yeah, maybe I did. Let's see. Number four. The answer is B, according to them. 529 plans aren't tax-deductible on federal returns.
Mm-hmm.
But
I understand that.
But it is on state. Yeah, I agree with that.
So maybe this was written by somebody in a state that has no income tax.
Right.
So there's no tax deductibility. It is deductible on your state income tax.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As long as you're going into a qualified 529 plan.
And the income that is used can be tax-free as long as they're used to pay for qualified higher education, according to the IRS. So
it generates income. They don't all generate income.
No.
Right?
Well, the income.
I don't like the wording.
I don't like the
wording of that question.
Who wrote this?
Yeah,
we need to look this guy up. All right. No, I agree. I think A and B. It's a blend between
could be
those two
arguments. Of A and B.
Yep.
No wonder if people scored so poorly. It was written
very poorly,
vaguely,
very poorly. Although the first question,
true.
All right,
but a 529 plan can be used for qualified education expenses.
Yep.
So it is a way to receive some tax benefits for doing that. The other thing, one quick thing to remember on 529 plans, you can change the beneficiary of those plans. So if you set one up, say you're a grandparent, you set one up for a grandchild, which is a very, very common situation, and then grandchild A decides not to go to college for whatever reason, or doesn't deserve to be helped going to college. For you change your mind, whatever
maybe
the reason
they got
is,
a scholarship.
You can. The nice thing is, he's flexible enough that you can change the beneficiary on that 529 to someone else, and so it isn't going to be, I mean, air quotes, lost or go to someone who doesn't deserve it, or those types of things. So it's there's a lot of flexibility there, and there are great programs to be a part of. And every state, there's some states that have better quality 529 plans set up than others, so it is worth shopping around.
Now, if you...
Since I didn't know this question was coming up, or I would have at my fingertips, there's actually a nice website that if you're interested, you can email me and I'll look it up for you. It's a website that kind of compares and contrasts the different 529 plans available around the
resource.
Country.
That would be a good resource.
And there are definitely some good ones and some that aren't so hot. So,
how's Colorado? Do you know?
Colorado's pretty strong.
Yeah.
Colorado's pretty strong, and I believe there's some really strong ones just off the top of my head in Minnesota.
Now,
some really good ones.
If you live outside of Colorado or Minnesota and you put money into a 529 plan, then it is not
Because you're not paying, if you're outside of Colorado, you're not paying Colorado income tax, so you're not getting the benefits there. But the plan itself is actually structured well, and the cost of the plan options, which is a lot of times the differentiating factor, right? It isn't. It's really a bucket that holds the investments that are inside there. So the cost of the administration of the bucket makes a big difference. So having a low cost plan is beneficial.
Now, if you, I don't really deal with 529s. I never have. Maybe something.
And I don't
start
do a
looking
ton of
into
those,
them. So I'll throw a question, see if you know it. If you, let's just say I put money into a Colorado 529 plan for my son, does the money come out tax-free, the earnings, if he goes out of state or anything like that?
It does. You can use it. So you're not restricted to, if you have a Colorado 529, you don't have to use it at an institution in Colorado.
Okay, good.
So you've got the flexibility to.
Any kind
so
of institution?
So they're pretty flexible.
Private institution or?
You know, there are some rules there, but I forget what the actual trigger is. It can't be just, you know, Bob's college out of the, you know, that's your neighbor.
Okay.
It has to be chatting with them on the patio out back while they barbecue.
Okay.
There's some restrictions there, but I forget the specific terminology of what they allow and what they don't allow. But there isn't a state requirement. You
something to look into then.
Yeah.
I'll have to look into that a little bit. We got to start planning for three children's
little time, but
let's. Yeah,
time is on your side. Now's a good time to plan.
Yeah. Actually, when I was buying or hopefully buying this new house, my plan was to rent my old house out. And since markets in Colorado are just crazy, I thought I'll just ride this out for the next 15 years and sell the house and fund my children's college. And maybe it won't hurt so bad. But it will.
It'll will one way or the other.
It'll really hurt. All right, ready for the next question. Number five.
Ready.
We're almost halfway through. What is a flexible spending account? A tax-exempt savings account exclusively for health benefits. B, a tax-exempt savings account that allows you to make home improvements. Or C, a tax-exempt account for medical purposes or childcare. 47% got the answer.
I don't like this the way this is worded.
Yeah.
Myself, because the flex spending accounts for medical and for childcare are set up separately.
Agreed.
They are both called flex spending accounts, but the money isn't shared back and forth between the two.
That's right.
So C, the flavor of C is pretty close. So I bet they're marking that.
Let me
as
read
the right
C again.
Answer.
Let me read C again.
Okay.
A tax exempt account for medical purposes or childcare. Doesn't say and.
Okay, then C is the
answer.
Right.
All right. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Anything you want to mention about this? Very different than HSAs, I'd say. Maybe we need to breach that topic.
Very different, but we will probably need to. Let's tackle that after we come back from the break here.
All right, sounds good.
Because we do need to chat a little bit about that and convince people who aren't using FSAs to do so. If they have one available to them at their work, because I think a lot of people don't participate to their detriment.
As long as they have medical expenses, Because usually it's
I don't know many people who avoid those.
Well, you know, younger people not going to the doctor, things like that. You know.
Okay. True. Not a lot of those people are listening to this radio show.
Oh, true. All right.
So,
good point.
So when we come back from this break, we're going to hear, let's see, the number one song from this week back in 1977 as we look back 40 years. This week is, let's see. This week in 1977 saw a country hit by this Rhinestone Cowboy. So we all know that's Glen Campbell. So it's not Rhinestone Cowboy. It's another one, but we've got a Glen Campbell hit from 1977. We'll hear what that is right after this short break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is, in fact, the number one song this week back in 1977 as we look back 40 years. That's in honor of 40 elapsed years, which is makes reference to a Social Security rule or regulation. I guess more of a rule on how your Social Security benefit is calculated. So that's we try to make kind of a weird connection with all these musical pieces as we come back from the breaks, how they connect back to the Social Security system. Here's the 40 elapsed years, which I guess to summarize it is really recognizing the fact that Social Security considers a air quote normal career to be 40 years long. And they envisioned a career lasting from about age 22 to 62. And so that's where they started. They said, let's take a look at 40 elapsed years. Now, people early on in the system, just as a little segue, if you were participating in Social Security and you retired in, say, 1940, well, the system didn't even start until 1935, so there hadn't been 40 elapsed years yet.
Mm.
So early on, people had fewer elapsed years that played a part in their calculation than today. By the time we hit, 1975, you would have been, there's people that would have been in the system for the entire 40 years. So anybody retiring after 1975 has all had 40 elapsed years as their foundation for future calculations, and we'll make reference to the next calculation after the next break, but that's where the 40 comes from.
So if they only had, say, 30 elapsed years simply because mm-hmm. the system wasn't in place that long, mm-hmm. was their benefit reduced, or is just
And they didn't
average?
Want that to happen. Right. It was not their fault that they just happened to be born when they were born.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is the calculation that determined their retirement benefit utilized fewer years of earnings record.
Gotcha.
And that was the key.
So there's quite possibly some people that had just a couple years of earnings, but...
Correct. Exactly.
Had a lifetime of Social Security.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a big deal. The system worked because your Social Security benefit actually doesn't come from the money that you've put in
right. no,
and
I
you're receiving later, even if you were only in the system for 2 years. Where your money is coming from when you retire is from current workers paying in, which there were... at that time.
But that was a hell of an investment for those
if
people.
If you think of it as an investment, what you put in versus what you got out.
Yeah.
A lot of those early people got a lot more out than they put in.
Yeah.
But...
kind of going the other direction.
Even this day, yeah. even today, actually, if you look at some of the statistics of the baby boomers, a lot of them, and this wasn't true of generations before them, but a lot of them, and this might alienate a few baby boomers, which is, I'm not intending to do that. These are just the facts that if you look at the these older of the baby boomer generation, many of them are actually going to get more out of the system than they put in because of the way the formula works. Future generations, so those that come after, so the Gen Xers, the Gen Ys, the millennials, they're going to receive quite a lot less on average out than what they put in. If you look at the average, now certainly at the extremes, at the high end, those people get out a lot less than they put in. At the low end, those people generally get more out than they put in. That's kind of how it's designed. It's designed to kind of level the playing field a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And but when you look at that median, that middle person, that middle of the road right now that receives about $1,400 a month in benefits, there are actually certain age groups where at that rate they're receiving out of the system more than they put in based on their life expectancy, which, you know, fairness or not, that's just kind of the way it
is. That's how it goes.
It's kind of this weird, when you look at the stats, this weird curve where it kind of peaks and then goes back down. So anyway, so that's where the 40 elapsed years come from. And that's why we look back 40 years to this number one song back in 1977. That was Southern Nights by Glenn Campbell. We've heard Glenn before with Rhinestone Cowboy. I forget how many weeks ago Rhinestone Cowboy was on, but this song was written by Alan Toussaint. He was inspired by his memories of growing up in the Louisiana Bayou, where his family spent time under the stars telling stories. That sounds very country.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Right? They probably drove to that spot in their pickup truck, and their dog was sitting next to them while they told the stories.
Makes sense. Write a song about it.
Yeah, it's country.
Yeah.
Song went on to be certified gold and to be nominated for Song of the Year. Anyway, back to the Retirement and IRA show.
We are here.
Yeah. We've gotten through 5 of the 10 questions. We better keep up the pace here so that we can
left off.
Get through the rest. Oh, right. You're going to talk about FSAs and HSAs.
Sorry.
So a flex spending account, first of all, for those who don't know, medical expenses can be tax deductible, but if you itemize, your medical expenses are only deductible, those medical expenses above 10% of your AGI under Obamacare. It used to be 7.
Mm.
So when they...
7.5, yeah.
Yeah, 7, 7.5, now 10. So let's say you have an adjusted gross income of $50,000, just to throw the number out there. The first $5,000 of medical expenses...
Can't deduct
them. If you have $6,000 worth, you can deduct 1,000 of it. You can deduct the 1,000 that's over the 10%, right? So for the most part, for most people, their medical expenses aren't tax deductible unless you pay for them through an FSA, spending account. That's the beautiful part. A flex spending account, which right now in 2017, I think the maximum that you can put in is about $2,800. You can check me on that, but I think it's about $2,800. And your employer sponsors this plan and withholds money from your paycheck pre-tax. So when you pay for something pre-tax, that's the same as receiving a deduction for the expense. So there's no 10% limit on this. They don't look at your AGI.
No, not at all.
So the first $2,800 of medical expenses that you're allowed to pay for through your flex spending account at work essentially are tax-free. You get to pay that with tax-free money. So it's a glorious thing because you otherwise, because some people might be thinking, well, gee, I don't need the flex spending account because I'm just going to deduct my medical expenses on my taxes. Mm. Because of that high limit, most people can't do
most
that.
People can't. It usually can only do it when you're a bit older, you have a lot of medical premiums and a little bit of income.
Right. So this actually opens a bit of an issue for me.
I think we talked about
this. Oh my gosh, this drives me crazy because the limit on the flex spending accounts used to be $4,000. You could put in up to $4,000, which sounds like a lot of medical expenses, but I happen to have a large family, so we have a lot of people going to the doctor. So we used to actually use the entire $4,000 of medical expenses. Mm. So it was very advantageous to us. With Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, to unpersonalize it, at the same time as they were saying your taxes will not be raised on for people earning less than $250,000, there was that whole thing over and over again. Well, that I'm calling shenanigans on that because when they lowered the flex spending account limit, and at the time it's up to $2,800 now, but it was went from $4,000 to $2,500. That $1,500 of medical expenses that a person like myself used to be able to pay for tax free. That $1,500 now was taxed.
Getting taxed, yeah.
So just to make the numbers simple, you know, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, for instance, that's about $400 of extra taxes. So if that were the case, if that's the tax bracket we're talking about, that person, their taxes just went up by $400 a year.
Exactly, yeah.
And that person made less than $250,000 a year. So this whole
shenanigans
crap that was being spouted that taxes will not go up for people below that. Here's an example of exactly the opposite. That's taxes went up by $400 a year, roughly. So that aside, that's water under the bridge. Nothing we can do about that now. I would prefer the flex spending account option to be higher. You don't have to put in that whole amount. You could do up to, at the time, $4,000. Now it's up to about this $2,800 level. But it's glorious because you can spend it on all kinds of things, and it's mostly for things that wouldn't be covered by insurance. So any of your out-of-pocket costs, like deductibles and co-pays.
Glasses,
yes. Not most over-the-counter drugs, but hearing aids.
Okay.
There's actually a very, very long list. So lots of things that you would normally be out of pocket for your family can be paid from this account. And the shocking thing is they usually say say you decide to withhold $2,400 a year out of your paycheck. Mm-hmm. You don't have to save it up to spend it.
You get it ahead of time.
$200.
Right.
So you agree to withhold $200 a month from your paycheck and put it into the flex spending account. On January 1st, you immediately have $2,400 to spend on medical expenses. You haven't put in a dime yet.
Right.
You're going to be putting in $200 a month as you go through, but that amount is available to you immediately. And they wanted to make it so you didn't have to save it up in order to spend it. You essentially get to borrow the money, if you want to think of it as such, because it's not yours, it's not in there yet, but you get to spend it. So it's actually lovely. And most of these accounts, they let you use a debit card. So when you go to the drugstore or go to the doctor, you just whip that card out, that benefits card, and you use that. And that's money that you don't have to spend out of your regular checking account. And I'm a big fan.
Now, is it possible to spend it on things that, you know, maybe you shouldn't spend it on? Would you be penalized?
You have to prove. And essentially what happens is that turns out to be you have to either pay it back, let's say they call you on it.
Right.
Because the sponsor has to keep records that it's qualified. Mm-hmm. If you go to, just to throw out a name, if you go to, say, Walgreens, they actually code the transaction as qualified.
Oh, okay.
So you don't even have to provide receipts or anything. The sponsor knows told them.
Okay.
Other places, though, they will require a copy of the receipt. If you don't supply it, and you don't pay the money back, you can pay it back to the flex account saying, oh, oops, I spent it on this and I shouldn't have.
Right.
And then there's no foul. But otherwise, they will essentially treat it as a non-qualified distribution and you're taxed on it.
Penalty?
Not that I'm aware of.
Something to look into.
Not that I'm aware of. So
all right.
You would owe the taxes on it. They'll send a report to the IRS that this actually that was put in here tax-free went out to something that was not qualified, so this should be considered taxable income.
Okay, makes
and
sense.
You owe tax on it. But I don't believe there's a penalty. I've never tested it, though, personally.
And I have never run into one. It's pretty much always a use it or lose it. So
it is a use it or lose it before, but that is something that 2 years ago, they changed, where you could roll over to the following year up to $500.
Okay.
Of the
balance. So you got a little buffer there.
So you did have, because that one slight complaint is if you withheld $2,400 and he only spent $2,000 on medical expenses, the $400,
you lose it. Where's the benefit, right?
Right. But so under the Obama administration, they actually did change that so that you could roll over $500, which I believe is still the dollar amount.
Okay.
Strangely enough, not all plans adopted it. It wasn't a requirement. It was one of these things where they were allowed to
do it,
but the plan had to change their rules to accommodate the rollover. If you're like me, I mean, what I would do is try to estimate my medical expenses through maybe September or October and just
go for that amount.
Yeah, go for that so you don't have to worry about rolling it over and that sort of thing.
But, makes sense.
But it's glorious. Long description of FSAs, HSA is a whole different story unless you want to say something more about
one other thing. Because I used to have an FSA when I was single and no kids or anything like that, so I hardly used it. But what I did do is my employer would, I'd go and get a physical or something, and my employer would put $500 into the FSA.
Hmm.
It was great. So I always had a little bit of money in there if I ever needed it. So you might have other benefits to go and, you know.
Some employers, it's just your own money that you've elected to put in there.
Right.
But some employers could throw money in there for you.
As an incentive,
Well, that's cool.
All right.
An HSA.
Whole other topic.
Whole different type of a situation. Maybe you can talk about the basic structure of a health savings account.
What do we like to call this? Triple tax-free. It's where you can put money in, not get taxed on it. It can grow, and you won't get taxed on the growth. And if you take it out for a qualified medical expense, you don't get taxed on it. So it is the most tax-efficient savings vehicle that I'm aware of in that sense.
In one sense, it's very different than a flex spending account, because a flex spending account, it's not invested in anything that could possibly grow.
No.
So there's no concern about growth. The money goes in and out tax-free, so that part is similar to an HSA. But an HSA accumulates every year. Right, you put money in, you can take money out for qualified medical expenses, but if there's any left in there, it just rolls over to the next year and continue to grow if that's ultimately what you end up doing with it. And you can then use the HSA later on in life if you use it a little bit, but if it happens to accumulate and get really big by the time you're in retirement, you could spend it on all kinds of medical expenses as a retired person, which is very attractive because it wouldn't count as income. It's completely tax-free at that point. Jim actually he's doing something interesting. There's no, currently under law, there's no requirement for redeeming receipts or taking money out of your HSA to pay for medical expenses. There's no restriction on the date on the receipt. So believe it or not, he's paying his medical expenses out of pocket, and I'm not sharing anything private because he's said this on the radio, keeping the receipts so that in retirement he can start taking money out of his HSA tax-free and giving these receipts that are from 5 or 10 years
really?
Ago.
Really? Yeah. Because
currently there's no requirement that you submit receipts on a timely basis. So that's an interesting strategy.
That might change, though.
Might change. And if that comes up, I'm sure he'll suddenly throw all the receipts at the HSA,
or maybe quickly,
or quickly
take the deduction, or take the
something. But if you pass away, actually, with money in your HSA, it goes to a spouse tax free.
Yes.
So there's a lot of tax.
I don't know how that works for non-spouses.
For non-spouses, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
But
I ran into that a couple times at my previous employer. Spouse was easy. Non-spouse, there was issues.
A different story, right?
Yeah.
So HSA is a little different animal. It's kind of like an IRA dedicated to medical expenses that there's zero taxes at any point as long as you're using it for qualified medical expenses.
And to qualify for it, you have to have a high deductible plan.
True. That's the one caveat is it's has to be paired with a high deductible medical insurance plan. For instance, I don't participate in such a plan, so I can't have an HSA. I can have a flex spending account, which I do, but I can't have an HSA But these high deductible options are more and more popular these days.
Yes, they are.
And the intent is the HSA is to pay for the kind of the daily out-of-pocket things, and then you're only using the insurance for catastrophic events, thus the high deductible.
Right.
Anything below the deductible, you're going to pay for through your HSA. At least this is the concept, right?
But something smart and to do?
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, I think we've discussed this in the past, is maybe, you know, pay out of pocket like you should, but not from your HSA. Let that HSA accumulate so you get that extra tax deferral and extra growth that's tax-free, because otherwise it's essentially an FSA where you put it in, you take it out. So you really want to...
So there's some interesting things you can do with it. So I'd recommend if you have an HSA and would like to hear about some of the... Especially if you're not fully funding the HSA, you might want to chat with us or someone else who can lay out for you some of the advantages of putting money in the HSA, even if ultimately you're using it more for a form of a retirement-style account rather than for your current medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So...
All right.
Okay.
All right. That's FSAs. Let's go to number six.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting one. Do you have a pet?
Too many, actually.
Too many pets.
Have three dogs, two cats, two ferrets.
Oh boy.
No fish currently, and we are without chickens, which is good.
Oh.
My wife has dreams of owning pygmy goats, though.
Oh.
So that might be what I'm thinking of doing. Have you seen the goat yoga?
No.
Yeah, okay, that's a thing in Colorado, at least. I don't know about elsewhere.
You do yoga with a goat?
You do yoga with these pygmy goats in the room. And so you're in these poses, and of course the pygmy goats see you as playground equipment, and they hop up on you and play around while you're doing your yoga.
And who wants that?
People who go to goat yoga.
Okay. Anyways, we're going on to number six here.
I've never attended.
Oh. It's getting a little weird in this room.
Yeah.
If you foster a pet.
Oh, yeah.
From a nonprofit charitable organization, can you claim a tax deduction? A. Yes, but you can only write off certain items like food, shelter, and medical expenses. B. Yes, you can write off all expenses. Or C. No, you can't write this off. Weird question. But 45% got the answer right.
Mm-hmm. Probably because they were guessing.
And if you think about it from a standard charitable gifting side of things, I think you'll be able to get the answer.
Yeah. So it's either A or B.
Yes, that's correct.
Would there be a restriction on deducting only the food and that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since it would be hard to value your labor, I would say it's probably A.
Yeah, you're correct on that. Pretty much any time, because you're fostering, you're not, you technically are helping the nonprofit charitable organization out. You are not purchasing this animal for your own benefit. You're taking them on and, you know, you're giving them home. You're
feeding
giving
them
food. Yeah, exactly. So you're helping out this nonprofit. So therefore those expenses would be,
so it's like a donation to the nonprofit, but instead of a cash donation, you're donating food and shelter and things.
I like to think of it as the nonprofit no longer has to take these expenses on themselves. So you can write them off.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That's an odd question for this list.
Yes.
We have pretty standard things, and then we have this weird foster pet thing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well,
interesting list you have here, Justin.
there's one more weird
one. By the way,
coming.
Don't tell my wife about that whole foster tax deduction thing.
Oh. Does she listen to the show?
She won't. I'm going to make sure she's busy this Saturday.
Okay.
Because that's, talk about just attracting more.
Because maybe she could
when
foster
I was out of town
pygmy goats.
Recently, when I was
you
out of
that's
town,
possible?
She had a dog rescue come and observe our home for potential fostering.
Oh.
And she said, oh, I'm just checking.
Oh, yeah. Just want to see if we could do it.
So
leaving all
options on
the table. If
she hears that there's some sort of tax benefit to it, I'm done for.
You are done for.
So let's keep that just between us.
All right. Let's see. Number seven. If you lend money to a friend and she doesn't pay you back, or he... Can you write it off? The answer, it's A, yes, you can write off the entire loan. B, under certain circumstances, it can be deducted under capital loss rules. Or C, no, you can't write it off.
A friend?
A friend.
I'd say it's B.
Yes, you are correct.
As long as it's not a family member, you're probably safe. Those are going to be a little touchier.
Yeah, it gets a little tough on that one, but I think even on the family side, you can do that. As long as it cannot in any way, shape, or form be considered a gift is how I remember that rule.
Yeah.
So if there's a note and they're paying interest and there's no possibility that this is a gift, and then you can't just write it off. They say, oh, well, I can't pay you anymore, buddy. I'm sorry. No, it doesn't work out. You have to send, you know.
You have to try to collect
it. You have to collect.
Legitimately and, yeah,
exactly,
and things like that.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So that's how I remember that rule. Let's see what the answers say. Number 7. Yes, the loan becomes a capital loss. You must be able to prove that the loan has become worthless and that you had not intended to make a gift. Issuing a 1099-C or the cancellation of debt form is also a pretty good idea. So it makes sense. And I think if the other side of that, the person who is receiving that 1099-C has not filed bankruptcy, they now have to claim that as income.
They do, because it's a forgiven. Yeah. The debt's forgiven.
Yeah.
So that would be on them.
Yes, that is on them.
So that music means we're at our final break. When we come back from this final break, we're going to hear this week's number one hit from 1982. The hint, I'm not going to read the hint she gave me. The hint is, this is the song that's been number one for the past 7 weeks, but we haven't been playing it because we didn't want to hear it 7 times in a row. So we'll hear what song that was when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a 1-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. I gave Joan Jett a little extra airtime there since we'd been denying her rightful place as the number one song from 1982 for the past 7 weeks. We played it once 7 weeks ago, and or maybe 6 weeks ago. But
she was on the radio all the
denied.
Time for week was, after week. In
she was, but that was a long time ago. We haven't heard much from Joan. We're on a first-name basis, by the way, Joan.
What'd she call you?
Honey Bunches.
Honey Bunches, huh?
Yeah. Oh. I don't, that's a long time ago. Back when I used to be the bass player for Blondie.
Oh, boy. Does your wife know that?
No. You know Blondie?
Yes.
Look it up. I'm on there. Bass player. So, back to Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Clearly, I don't know
performing
what the...
I Love... You know Blondie, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I Love Rock and Roll. Joan Jett first heard The Arrows perform this song when she was touring in England in 1975, 7 years before this hit, number one. She was touring as in a teenage all-girl band called The Runaways. She loved the song but couldn't get her bandmates to perform it. In 1979, she tried a version with Steve Jones and Paul Cook of the Sex Pistols, and the song still didn't take off, but she wasn't deterred. In 1981, she formed the Blackhearts and decided to make another go of it, and by March of 1982, I Love Rock and Roll hit number one, where it remained for 7 weeks on the Billboard. So her stick-to-itiveness has paid off. And we're looking back 35 years, because 35 years We talked about the 40 elapsed years. What Social Security essentially said was your career is going to be 40 years, but we realize there's going to be some years where you maybe don't work or you're underemployed or whatever. So we're going to throw out your five worst years. So of the 40 elapsed career years, we're going to throw out your worst five, leaving the best 35, and we're going to call those your computational years. So this is why we look back 35 years to 1982. Those 35 years are the key to your retirement benefit. The 35 computational years are used to calculate your average indexed monthly earnings, which we call the AIME, A-I-M-E. And from that AIME, through another formula, they determine your PIA. I don't know why we pronounce it AIME, but we don't call the other one PIA. But we don't.
I've heard people call it PIA.
Really?
Yeah.
Like onomatopoeia?
Yeah. Maybe Jim says that.
I think Jim might say that. Sounds like a Jimism.
It's a Jimism.
Yeah, there's one person that calls it the PIA. But it's the PIA, your primary insurance amount, which is in fact the retirement benefit you are owed at your full retirement age, which will be, for those who haven't retired yet, will be between 66 and 67 years old under current law, depending on the year that you were born. So that's how this all ties in musically to Social Security, and which brings us to our update on what's new with our blog post, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, we discuss a nearly tragic story. So it was a tragic story averted about nearly $70,000 worth of survivor benefits that a person we had interacted with was about to lose because of poor advice given to them by the Social Security Administration themselves, by a rep at the Social Security office. Under the rep's advice, they were going to walk away from about $70,000 of benefits that they were entitled to receive because the Social Security representative was proposing a claiming strategy that left that money on the table. So I expand upon that and explain what happened, with the moral of the story essentially being, before you go in to talk to Social Security, have a really good idea as to what you're entitled to and what your plan is for claiming your Social Security benefit. Then if they tell you something that's counter to that, investigate. Go find out if you're right or they're right, because more often than not, if you've done your homework, you will be right and they will actually be giving you less than optimal information. So this is probably one of the worst cases as far as dollar amount that I've ever seen. We run into this type of thing all the time. Sadly, it's usually after the fact when it's too late to fix it, and we just have to let people know, well, this is what it is, and you could have gotten something else, but now it's too late because you oftentimes cannot redo some of these issues. If it's a blatant error on the part of Social Security, then oftentimes they will fix those and retroactively make you whole. However, if it's just a matter of I had the choice of doing A or B, and B turned out to be a bad choice, they don't let you undo that and go back to the A category where you ultimately determined was going to be beneficial to you. So do your own research. Know what you're planning to do before you talk to Social Security. So that's – any questions on that, Justin?
No, all makes sense to me. But I did Wikipedia you, Chris Stein.
One second.
What's new, pussycat?
We have to close out that segment before we move on to something else. So you did, in fact, Google Blondie.
Mr. Co-founder and guitarist of the new wave band Blondie.
That's – the guitar is a bass.
Yeah. But, bass guitar. Yeah, I guess you could see that. Mm-hmm. It turns out I finally got your birth date, though. I didn't realize you turned 67 this year.
Not everything on the internet is true.
No, it is Wikipedia. I mean,
yeah,
you should go in and edit that.
I should probably go edit that and fix that.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
See, I have a very colorful history.
What other things have you done?
Nothing noteworthy. Just isn't that enough?
A Louis C.K. lookalike and...
Well, that's true. Although Jim keeps accusing me of looking like... some cartoon
bear.
Yogi?
It's like this giant bear in a cartoon, so he can speak, so he's one of those. But he's wearing diapers. I'm like, what? Do I wear diapers?
Oh, is this like an older cartoon?
Oh, yeah. Before your time.
I've seen this before.
Yeah. There's a mama bear and a papa bear, and he's kind of dopey, and he's the child, but he's about twice the size
of
the parents.
Right.
And he wears diapers.
Do we know this?
I looked it up a couple weeks ago when Jim was telling me I looked like this person, but I forget what it was.
Okay.
Well, it'll probably come to me.
All right.
But many more people think that I look more like Louis C.K.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
I'm not as abrasive as Louis.
No.
But that's his shtick, since he's a comedian. It's meant to be abrasive.
It is.
But anyway, we need to get back to our list.
We're almost done.
You have some burning issues to discuss. But we all want to get through the quiz, right? Because are we through seven?
We are through seven. That was number seven, if you lent money to a friend. So number eight, which of the following is tax deductible? You're in for a surprise on this one. Mm-hmm. Gambling losses.
Okay.
B, sex reassignment surgery. Or C, babysitting. If you're doing a parent, or if you're a parent doing charity work. Okay. Or D is all of above, or E is none of the above. So gambling losses, sex reassignment surgery, babysitting if you're doing charity work, all of the above, or none of the above?
Well, I know pretty much for sure two of them are. The third I'm not sure about, but since two of them are, I've got to go with D, all of the above.
You're playing it smart. See, you've taken some multiple choice tests.
I have. I give a lot of multiple choice tests as well.
So you know how to avoid those traps, or do you try and get them stuck in those? I mean,
as an instructor?
Yeah.
I personally hate the all of the above and none of the above.
Yeah.
I especially hate the none of the above because that means it could be any answer in the world other than these other three that are on here.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a pretty wide open question. So I don't prefer those because I didn't like them as a student. So my mantra is to not inflict upon my own students things I didn't like done to me as a student. And it's worked out pretty well.
Get along with that.
So I don't do that. The all of the above sometimes does work. What I do, however, do, which much to the disappointment of students, is I know the common mistakes that are made with calculations, for instance.
Oh, yes.
And I tell them ahead of time, I will conveniently provide for you that as an answer. So just because you see it on the test as an answer does not mean your calculator is telling you the truth. Well, your calculator is telling you the truth. You just may have not interacted with the calculator properly.
Yes, I've run into that.
So I do that.
Times. Yeah.
And that's
fair.
People. I ask them this question. Think about it. If I have you do something and I haven't provided the wrong answer as a choice, I ask them, would you like me to sit next to you at the test? And every time you get the answer incorrect, would you like me to tap on your shoulder and say, no, that's wrong. Try it again. Would that be helpful to you?
Mm.
And of course, everybody would love for me to do that.
Right.
Well, if I don't provide these common mistakes as answers,
it's essentially what
that's
you're doing.
What I'm doing. I'm sitting there saying when they get it, so it just is, it makes for a much better measurement of their abilities.
Good job.
Good job. Way.
So, yeah, I like that.
So anyway, yes, I do have some multiple choice experience. So
which two do you think?
I felt
for sure
pretty good about the first one for sure. I know
gambling losses
with limitations, but they are deductible. Child care while doing work for a charity does the middle one, the sex reassignment surgery. I don't know for sure on that. I probably would tend to say yes, but I don't know how the IRS classifies that as, because I don't think you can't deduct facelift.
No, you can't. So that's right? That's exactly what my stance was. I thought, I don't know
is
about
that elective
this. I don't know about this.
Or is it necessary?
Right. So I had the same feeling, and I kind of sided with the IRS's initial stance, saying I don't think that's right, but it is. Sex reassignment surgery is deductible as a medical expense. Mm. I looked it up. There was a case O'Donovan versus the Commissioner. It was a United States tax
court.
Sounds
like a Hardy Boys novel.
regarding sex reassignment surgery. And it turns out that someone who's been diagnosed with a gender identity disorder can deduct a sex reassignment surgery cost as long as they are necessary medical expenses. The IRS argued that, no, this is more of a cosmetic treatment, but it was shot down pretty hard in court. So it is a deductible expense.
Hmm.
But, one, you have to be claiming itemized deductions. You have to get over your 10% hurdle there for medical expenses, which I would assume it's probably a fairly expensive surgery and insurance isn't covering it, but it's deductible. So other things, if we want to get into it, we talked about gambling losses.
Mm-hmm.
You said with restrictions. I can dig into that a little bit. It's really only up to your winnings. So you can't just be going out and gambling and deducting those. Same rules. It's on an itemized list.
But you're supposed to report gambling winnings as well.
Absolutely.
Which not all people do that I know of. But I'm not a gambler, so I'm not judging. I'm not divulging anything for myself. But I can imagine just like when people win something or receive something through gambling, they don't always end up reporting that on their taxes, although they're supposed to. But you can offset the earnings that you have, winnings, with losses that you've taken. So if you have a good day and a bad day, they might offset for tax purposes.
Now, something to think about there is you have to itemize to get that deduction for gambling losses up to the extent of your winnings. But the winnings are there regardless. So if you don't have enough to itemize, say you're not a very big gambler, but you won a couple $1,000s, but you spent a couple $1,000s gambling, and you're not itemizing,
you don't get that.
You lose that. So
call it a sin tax.
But the IRS actually has some pretty stringent requirements that you need to keep track of if you are like a serial gambler. They want you to keep a journal or a diary that talks about everything, the lotteries and the raffles you've participated in, the casino games you've played, where you've been, where you won, who you're with.
What?
I'm serious. People you gambled with.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about, maybe we could document all that with a selfie.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Although some of the gambling establishments I know about don't like you taking pictures. So that might be an issue.
Where are you going?
You can't sit at the blackjack table turn around and take
sense.
A selfie.
Makes sense.
What do you mean, what kind of gambling? Respectable gambling establishments, right? They don't want people cheating with cameras at the...
Clearly, I don't gamble, so... and babysitting, that's was a little trick question there, I think, for people who actually do know taxes, because if you are not... If you're paying for childcare, but you're not working, that's not something you, you can't get. You can't get a credit for that either.
But
so.
Childcare to enable you to go to work is deductible,
right?
With certain limitations, limitations
right.
as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Okay. So work and or charity.
Exactly. Yeah. Seems to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Number 8, 9. Are we number 9?
Number 9. Which
I think we're going to make it, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Almost perfect timing.
Oh, wow.
We have 7 minutes.
Which of these is the worst mistake? We went back and forth about this one.
Oh, yeah. You did share this one with me.
If you owe, this is A, not filing your taxes by the deadline, or B, filing but not paying your taxes by the deadline, C, you are owed a refund but you file late, or D, you're owed a refund, but you don't file at all. So you owe, but you don't file your taxes by the deadline.
Yep.
You file, but you don't pay your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You are owed a refund, but you file to get your refund. Or you're owed a refund, and you never file.
What's the worst mistake?
What's the worst mistake? Kind of funny wording here.
Well, with... If you never, ever file, you'll never get your refund.
Right.
So if your refund is substantial, that would be that's 100% penalty if you think about it. All that money just gets...
Exactly.
Because the only way you can get it is claiming.
I agree.
So if you never file, If you just file late, you can still get it. But if you never file, they're essentially saying you're going to just give up on that refund.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see where that's a big issue. If you owe money, the act of not filing at all is the biggest penalty. There's still a penalty if you file late, but no, if you file on time, but just don't pay it mm-hmm. on time,
mm-hmm.
there's a different penalty there that is less than if you didn't file at all. They really want you to file.
But those penalties are capped.
They are. So I think D, I think the last one is...
You got
it. Is correct. You don't
you
if you never, ever file. If it's just that you file late, that is not much of a penalty other than you've waited to get your refund where you could have gotten it sooner. But maybe, do you have the some clarification on the penalties for the lack of filing or filing but not paying?
I do. I do. I have a little tax tip from right off the IRS webpage in 2012. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this is up to date. It sounded right when I read through it. But eight important points about two different penalties you may face if you file or pay late. You want me to go through line by line?
Well, can you just give us
possible?
Maybe the file late
okay.
first?
Okay, if you do not pay by the due date, you could face failure. So there could be a penalty is what they're saying. The failure to pay a penalty is generally more than the failure to pay penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way that works is they cap out at the same point, but one accumulates a lot faster. So the penalty for filing late is usually 5% of the unpaid taxes for each month or part of a month that a return is late. The penalty will not exceed 25% of your unpaid taxes. So
that's big, 25%. And 5% per month?
Yeah, it adds up
real fast.
That's
pretty significant.
It adds up real fast.
And that's for not filing at all.
That's a penalty for filing late.
Right, yeah. Well, not filing late,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So not filing at all by the deadline. So
right.
You're filing late.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So which, 5 months in, you've hit your max penalty.
Yeah. So if you don't, so let's say you file, but you don't send in the check with it.
If you do not pay your taxes by the due date, you will generally have to pay a failure to pay penalty mm-hmm. of 0.5%, so 0.5% of your unpaid taxes for each month or part of month after the due date that the taxes are not paid. This penalty can be as much as 25%. So like I was saying,
it'll take you a long time because 0.5% per month, that's effectively,
now.
You know, 6% per year.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got 4 years, you know, 50 months mm-hmm. before you actually reach the 25% rather than 5 months where you've maxed out the,
mm-hmm.
that 5% per month versus 0.5% per month. That's what I meant by the failure to file. The failure to send anything in is much worse than the failure to pay on time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always that's why they always recommend at least file. If you can't pay, there's lots of choices. There's payment arrangements that can be made. But even if you ended up taking a little time to pay, 0.5% per month, plus isn't there an interest issue? That's the penalty, but then isn't there also a little bit of interest? I think there is. I might be thinking of the state.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up.
But in either way, it's the bottom line is at least file on time.
Yeah.
Even if you owe, if you can't pay, it's the worst thing you can do. You'll just make the problem worse if you neither file nor pay. You want to at least file and say, yeah, I owe X amount, but
if you
don't have the money right now, so I'm not paying you, so we need to work something out.
If both the failure to file penalty and the failure to pay penalty apply in any month, the 5% failure to file penalty is reduced by the failure to pay penalty. So it doesn't look like they're double dinging you there.
Well, it's still at 5% per month.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, you still got that one. Yeah.
So absolutely,
You just have the worst of the two.
Right.
Exactly.
So let's do the last. Can we do the last? We got 2 minutes to do the last question.
All right. If your exemptions and withholdings are correct, your tax refund should be A, $2,500 or more, B, $1,500 or more, C, $500 to $1,500, or D, as close as zero as possible. Oh, we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, that'd be D. If you've got your W-4 perfect and the withholding is happening perfectly, then you are sending in every month what you ultimately are going to owe.
I think we should read this answer for our wives real quick. What do you think about this?
Yeah, go. Why don't you read it and then I'll judge. All You've right. got about 35 seconds.
The answer is D. While Americans on average get a refund of about $2,800 in 2015, according to the U.S. Treasury audit, if your exemptions and withholdings are correct, the amount should be close to zero. Let me repeat that. According to the U.S. Treasury audit, if your exemptions and withholdings are correct, the amount should be close to zero. Otherwise, you are giving the U.S. government an interest-free loan during the year.
Mm-hmm.
However, things can always vary case by case. So.
True. But if you have trouble saving, this is a way to automatically put money aside and then get, you know, they said the average is $2,800. That's a lot. But say, you know, a couple thousand dollars that you can then do something else with. If you don't have the discipline to put it in a shoebox or in your savings account, maybe that is a good plan overall for your financial health. So who's to judge?
No.
Our wives are clearly correct on this.
No doubt about it. 100%.
Yeah. So thanks for joining me, Justin.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me.
Another time.
Yeah.
Much easier to do this with another person rather than solo.
Have you run the solo before?
Not for a long time, but I think I did one solo show. Not a lot of fun. So thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show. We will be back next week, and we'll be hearing from Jim about his big trip to Chicago and the Retirement Income Summit. So in the meantime, if you have any questions, go to jimhelps.com. We'd be more than happy to field your emails. So have a great week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.